Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Happy Groundhog Day, everybody. That thing on Rand Paul's head woke up this morning, saw its shadow, went absolutely nowhere, and now we know we have 6 more weeks of, oh, who am I kidding, years and years and years of bad government and stupid libertarian ideas. This is the horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. Sorry, multitasking here. Been so long since I had to sign into the chat room, I'd forgotten my own daggum screen name. But there we are. If you would like to jump into the Horn chat room as well, you are mighty welcome so to do. All you have to do is go to headonradionetwork.com. Pick yourself out a screen name. Pick yourself out a password. Hop right in. And let's see what. So let me start out here at 3 minutes past the hour of 6 p.m. in the Eastern Standard Time Zone on the second day of February 2015 by thanking our buddy Gary Laborman for Have a Morian Monday on me, which he put forward on Friday. Oh, for pity's sakes, the Rick Smith Show is running on the stream. All right, stand by. Let's see if I can get this fixed. Okay, then. Apparently the stream is now cleared, and so we'll get this thing started in earnest. What I was saying before I realized that we weren't streaming was I was extending thanks to our buddy Gary Laborman for the Have a Morian Monday on Me show he is bringing you this evening. And I was also going to mention the fact that this being the first full program of the new month of February, it is time, of course, as it is with every first program of the month, for Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge, which we will pursue through this evening. And I had a note earlier today from Peter, who wanted to make sure that he got into who wanted to make sure that he got in on Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge. So that means that there is only $130 to go on Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge. So $130 we're trying to raise this evening, 13 at 10, 10 at 13, and since we're going to devolve into dollars and cents after that, I can't do the gazentas nor the ciphering. Right? Right. Okay. Thank you very kindly, Gary. Lima Charlie. Excellent. We are a rollin'. So, again, this is the second day of February 2015. It is Groundhog Day. And in fact, that thing on Rand Paul's head woke up this morning and saw a shadow and realized we're going to have several more years of terrible government. Mm-hmm. I mention that because it is, in fact, Moran Monday. Proudly brought to you by Gary, Laborman. And, well, there's some kind of Rand Paul news out there, if you know what I mean. Oh, dear God, we're going to do this some more this evening, aren't we? Working! One of these days, that's okay, that's okay. It's all going to get ever so much better very quickly. But the thing is, I engaged, and dadgummit.
You've got to remember that these are just simple farmers. These are people of the land. You know, morons.
That's right, that's right. Wait a minute, let's see if we can get this, the next part to work. There we go, yeah, oh cool. Hurry, hurry, hurry. Step right up. You will not believe your ears. It's Moran Monday on the Horn. Here, behind this cybernetic veil of cybernetic canvas, you will find right-wing morans of all stripes. Get a brain, morans. We got birther morans, deather morans, tenther morans, booger-eating morans, bircher morans, libertarian morans, bloodthirsty libertarian morans. We got repiglican morans. We got morans. More morans than you can shake a stick at or anything else that might rhyme with it. That's right. This, you can't tell the morans without a program, and this here is the program that tells the morans you just can't tell them much. Yes, indeed, for $130 that we're going to try to raise individually among the Horn Family Commune congregation this evening, you will have access to more morans than you ever imagined or wanted. Oh, dear, oh, dear, oh, dear. A general advisory for people entering the Moran Monday tent. Hang on to your wallets, your purses, your children, your backpacks, your European-style man bags, and whatever else you might have handy, because the morans can get grabby. Oh, dear God. It appears they've even already gotten to the Calliope. Where do we get? Okay, so I said I knew where we were going to begin, because that's why I mentioned Rand Paul and that thing waking up on Rand Paul's head this morning. And seeing its shadow, proving that we will have many more years of bad government. Absolutely. What do I mean by that? Well, for starters, just to sort of set the scene, if you will. There's a blogger who is Nigerian. He lives, therefore, in Nigeria. His name is El Nathan John. He lives in Abuja, Nigeria, and he tweeted earlier, "Our thoughts are also with the measles-ravaged country America. I hope we are screening them before they come to Africa." And no, we will not be playing Africa by Toto as any form of a bumper. Mm-mm, no. I don't feel like blessing the rains down in Africa this evening. Because if you actually look at the lyric, I mean, the thing is, Toto were such wonderful musicians. They were. They're studio musicians, good sidemen. then you read the lyrics to the song Africa, and it sounds like something Sarah Palin would say. I bless the rains down in Africa. Time to do the things we never have. And she's coming in 12:30 flight. Sounds like the man might be on somebody's back, whether it's bent or not. Jesus. So anyway, well, what he's doing there is L. Nathan John is sort of zinging the Ebola hysteria that gripped this country a couple of months back. But, of course, it's not a joke that the United States is in the middle of a measles outbreak. Unlike people in, Sierra Leone, Liberia, who were in the grips and are in the grips of an Ebola infestation, and an Ebola epidemic, pandemic, I'm not sure what the official designation is, but it's very real. They had no control over that epidemic. Now, scientific research that I have read in the last couple of months says that they have identified the source of the Ebola outbreak. And it was apparently a big old holler tree full of bats. And little boys being little boys, it was a fun thing for little boys to go and catch the bats and play with them until they got all dead. The bats, not the boys. But that turned loose the Ebola, and, well, the rest is, sadly, history, including some pretty embarrassing conduct on the part of the United States. So I'd say we probably deserve to have our little noses tweaked by that writer. But unlike the Ebola outbreak in West Africa, the measles outbreak that we are experiencing here is entirely self-inflicted. For instance, I got a story here about a doctor. An actual physician who's an anti-vaxxer. This particular guy was interviewed on Chicken Noodle News. His name is Dr. Jack Wolfson. He's a cardiologist, not a pediatrician. So he doesn't ever have to deal with, like, little sick kids who happen to be sick with anything other than heart trouble, and he's probably not a pediatric cardiologist, so, you know, there you go. Right? There are considerable worries in Arizona at this time because a lot of people were exposed to the measles at a health clinic there. Mm-hmm. And when Chicken Noodle News, otherwise known as CNN, went to interview Dr. Jack Wolfson, he said, it's not his problem if other kids aren't vaccinated. Why? His statement, and this is a quote, my child is pure. Because, you see, this measles outbreak is not just something that happens. It's not it's not getting its legs because all of a sudden the measles vaccine doesn't work. And it's not Martian measles or measles from the Norblop system that traveled millions of light years and landed on a meteorite that crashed into Siberia and spread little measles viruses into the atmosphere, and now everybody's getting measles, and we're not protected because the vaccine doesn't work against Norblap measles. No. No. We have a measles outbreak in the United States because of, what's today? Anybody? Morons. Right, morons. Morons like Dr. Jack Wolfson, who says his kid is pure. I'm guessing Dr. Jack Wolfson didn't do a lot of diety changing during when his kids were infants. That'll take the purity argument right out of you. Meanwhile, a pediatrician in Arizona by the name of Dr. Tim Jacks is a little wrought. He took to the interweb tubes writing an open letter to the parents, to the parent of the unvaccinated child who exposed my family to measles. I have a number, Dr. Jacks writes. I have a number of strong feelings surging through my body right now. Towards my family, I'm feeling extra protective like a papa bear. Towards you, unvaccinating parent, I feel anger and frustration at your choices. By now, we've all heard of the measles outbreak that originated at Disneyland, or more accurately, originated from an unvaccinated person that infected other similarly minded vacationers. I won't get into a debate about the whole anti-vaccine movement, the thimerosal controversy, no longer even used in childhood vaccines, or the myth that MMR causes autism. There are changes in autistic brain chemistry prior to birth. Let's talk measles for just a minute. It once was widespread in the United States. It is now considered eliminated in the U.S., not continually circulating in the population, only contracted through travel out of country. Oops. Measles is highly contagious, that is, greater than 90% infectious, and can survive airborne in a room and infect someone 2 hours later. Another fun fact is that measles is transmittable before it can be diagnosed, 4 days before the characteristic rash appears. Measles itself is unpleasant, but the complications are dangerous. 6 to 20% of the people who get the disease will get an ear infection, diarrhea, or even pneumonia. 1 out of 1,000 people with measles will develop inflammation of the brain, and about 1 out of 1,000 will die. More on that in a minute, courtesy of our friend Ron in Raleigh. That sounds fun, Dr. Jacks writes. Okay, calm down, self. I assume you love your child just like I love mine. I assume that you're trying to make good choices regarding their care. Please realize that your child does not live in a bubble. When your child gets sick, other children are exposed, my children. Why would you knowingly expose anyone to your sick, unvaccinated child after recently visiting Disneyland? That was a boneheaded move. No, the word you're looking for, Dr. Jacks, is moran, M-O-R-A-N, as in get a brain. Why does this affect me and mine? Why is my family at risk if we're vaccinating? I'm glad you asked. Regarding measles, there are 4 groups of people. All are represented in my family. First, the MMR vaccine, measles, mumps, and rubella, results in immunity for most who receive it. 2 doses provides protection that can be confirmed with blood titers. My wife is in this group. Second, about 3% of fully vaccinated children do not develop a lasting immune response. They have low blood titers and are not protected against measles. If exposed, this group will likely get the illness. I am in this group. I was thankfully not exposed. Hey, so was I! I was exposed. 2 weeks after chickenpox, second grade, spring of the year. How bad was it? It was bad enough that I'm remembering it, and I can sit here and tell you, 52 years old that I am, about when it happened. Third, we have the unvaccinated. My son Eli is 10 months old. He's too young to receive the MMR vaccine and thus has no protection. Whether by refusal or because they are too young, exposed unvaccinated children have a 90% chance of getting measles. Fourth, there are children like my Maggie. These are children who can't be vaccinated, children who have cancer, children who are immunocompromised, children who are truly allergic to a vaccine or a part of a vaccine, i.e. anaphylaxis to egg, these children remain at risk. They cannot be protected except by vaccinating people around them. In August of 2014, Maggie was diagnosed with pre-B acute lymphoblastic leukemia, a form of childhood leukemia. We've been fighting leukemia since then. Good God. As if this family doesn't have enough to worry about, he's got to worry about the anti-vaxxer weirdos out there. Oh, no, dude, you know, like, we're not going to vaccinate, you know, because, like, it might not, well, you know, I mean, government! Wolverines! I mean, you know, when vaccines are, like, mandated, only the unvaccinated will be out. Wait, no. Dr. Jack says, back to my story. It was Wednesday. Maggie had just been discharged from Phoenix Children's Hospital after finishing her latest round of chemotherapy. That afternoon, she went to the PCH East Valley Specialty Clinic for lab draw. Everything went fine. We were feeling good until Sunday evening when we got the call. On Wednesday afternoon, Anna, Maggie, and Eli had been exposed to measles by another patient. Our two kids lacked the immunity to defend against measles. The only protection available was multiple shots of rubella immune globulin, measles antibodies. There were 3 shots for Maggie, 2 shots for Eli. They screamed, but now they have some temporary protection against measles. We pray it is enough. Unvaccinating parent, thanks for screwing up our 3-week vacation from chemotherapy. Instead of a break, we get to watch for measles symptoms and pray for no fevers or back to the hospital we go. Thanks for making us cancel our trip to the snow this year. Maggie really wanted to see snow. Remember, she has leukemia. But we will not risk exposing anyone else. On that note, thanks for exposing 195 children to an illness considered eliminated from the U.S. Your poor choices don't just affect your child. They affect my family and many more like us. Please forgive my sarcasm. I am upset and just a little bit scared. Signed, Papa Bear. And that's where cardiologist Dr. Jack Wolfson comes in to explain to CNN that his child is pure. Dr. Wilson, the cardiologist, Chicken Noodle News, asked him how would you feel if somebody died? Well, I could live with myself easily, he said. It's an unfortunate thing that people die, but people die. I'm not going to put my child at risk to save another child. If a child is so vulnerable like that, they shouldn't be going out into society. Wow. I really wish this hard drive wasn't just sitting here grinding and grinding and grinding, because this is where Jeff Spicoli would come in handy, and we keep him we keep that sound clip just for people like Dr. Wolfson. Anybody want to bet how Dr. Wolfson votes? Anybody want to bet that this merciless prick has congressional ambitions? Because this guy sounds like a Republican Senate candidate to me. Oh, yes. Oh, yes, he does. Which brings us to the original topic, to wit, Rand Paul and that thing on his head. According to BuzzFeed, potential Republican presidential candidate Carly Fiorina has some anti-vaxxer sentiments, and so does New Jersey Governor Chris Christie. In the case of Carly Fiorina, she told McKay Coppins,
I think there's a big difference between, just in terms of the mountains of evidence we have, a vaccination for measles and a vaccination when a girl is 10 or 11 or 12 for cervical cancer, just in case she's sexually active at 11. so I think it's hard to make a blanket statement about it. I certainly can't understand a mother's concerns about vaccinating a 10-year-old. I mean, I think vaccinating for measles makes a lot of sense, but that's me. I do think parents have to make those choices. I mean, I got measles as a kid. We all used to get measles. I got chicken pox. I got measles. I got mumps. But then, because we have science, we decided it would be a good idea to try not to have it. Because, remember, it does occasionally kill people. Remember, Dr. Wolfson, just ask Dr. Wolfson. He'll tell you, some people die, but my child is pure. Yeah. See, that's why this is, yeah, but I've got some misgivings. That doesn't work. In the realm of vaccination, everybody gets vaccinated. Fewer people die from vaccinations than die from measles. Fewer people have negative consequences from vaccinations than die from them. And we do it for the greater good of society so that we don't wind up with hundreds and thousands of people sick or exposed to a disease that could absolutely wipe them out, like, say, a little girl fighting for her life against leukemia. Carly Fiorina said,
yeah, I think parents have to make choices for their daughter, their family, and their children.
Oh, you know what I'm going to do? Well, no, I mean,
that's right, I hit the reset button. Anyway. So then, there's Rand Paul and that thing on his head. Apparently, that thing on his head told Rand Paul to tell Laura Ingraham,
as a physician, I've always been fascinated by the smallpox vaccine and the history of it. So I'm not anti-vaccine at all, but particularly most of them ought to be voluntary.
Well, you know, Aquabuda, more on that. You know, Aquabuda, they could be voluntary if we could count on everybody in the country to have some brains and give a damn about their fellow man, but that would mean that we lived in a country that didn't have any libertarians in it. Because libertarians care about nothing but themselves. They want to be little conservative Republicans who don't do any, who want to be able to, like, you know, smoke dope. Aquabuda worship! Right? And so we have to say, you gotta do it. We have to say it on account of the libertarians. We have to say it on account of the people, you know, the Jack Wilsons of the world. My child is pure! And we have to say it on account of the ignorant, the undereducated, of which in this country there are, unfortunately, more and more and more. Now, Rand Paul and that thing on his head don't want you to think that he's just some sort of wild-eyed anti-vaxxer.
Oh, yeah, you go and get that vaccination, the next thing you know, you're voting Democrat.
But do please remember the ground zero, if you will, of this latest outbreak is Orange County, California. Anybody want to tell me about the politics of Orange County, California? Yeah, we all know, right? But you know, Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, I'm rich, I'm socially secure, I'm comfortably well off. Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, I want you to know that he's not just, you know, totally libertarian loopy.
Well, there are times when there must be some rules, but for the most part, it ought to be voluntary. The biggest one was when Perry made it mandatory for everyone to have to take the HPV vaccine for a sexually transmitted disease. Well, I think it's a good idea to take the vaccine. I think that's a personal decision for individuals to take.
Personal, personal, personal. Marcia, Marcia, Marcia.
No let up. But this is the state of the Republican Party today. Because teabagger, are teabaggers afraid of needles? I don't know. I don't know. Why is it? Okay, let's try to answer this question. It may be difficult. To understand why there are right-wing anti-vaxxers, you have to ask, why is there Alex Jones? And to answer, why is there Alex Jones, you have to realize that there has been a concerted effort in this country to undermine knowledge and education, and particularly science. This is a country where several years ago, 27% of respondents in New Jersey said they weren't sure, not yes, not no, 27% of respondents said they weren't sure whether Barack Obama is the Antichrist, or as we now know, the Antichrist. I, for one, welcome our insect overlords. This is a country where more people believe in angels than have any sort of functional understanding of the theory of evolution. This is a country where a significant plurality thinks that every word in the Bible, preferably the King James Version, is the inspired word, the inspired literal word of God. I just happened to open up a Gideon Bible over the weekend, and the very first thing you see when you open the little hardcover there is there's a list of verses, you know, in times of worry, in times of fear, blah, 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 blah. And how to be saved. And I didn't have a pen with me. Because at the bottom, I wanted to also inscribe, for a good time, Genesis chapter 19, verses 30 through 38. That's my favorite Bible story, the story of Lot's daughters getting Lot all liquored up and playing hide the salami with Papa. Full body shiver. Yeah. Uncle Daddy! Right. The stupid. It burns as us. And then there's rising Fox News TV radio Rwanda star Andrea Tanteros. Andrea Tarantula. Who told America that Eric Holder runs the Department of Justice like the Black Panther Party.
Oh, really?
Uh-huh. Well, she's decided to unleash her profound intellect on the measles vaccination issue. They've got this program over there where four women talk to one guy. And so today, Andrea Tarantula shares time on screen with a woman by the name of Kennedy Montgomery, another rising star. And she declared that it was irrational progressives who don't vaccinate their children. Because, you know, Orange County, California, is a veritable bastion of irrational progressivism. But anyway, enter Andrea Tarantula, Tantaros, who, in order to make sure that the nonagenarian base demographic of Fox News TV Radio Rwanda remains ignorant and terrified, she chimed in with,
"There's a lot of controversy, especially with those vaccinations when it comes to newborn babies."
Oh, F me to pieces. Did we not just go through the letter from Dr. Jax where he talked about the fact that he's got a son who's 10 months old and isn't old enough for the MMR vaccine yet?
And not just about measles. I know personally, I had a brother who was autistic, and there's a belief among many that it's not the actual vaccinations that cause autism. It's the proximity of the vaccinations, that their teeny tiny little immune systems can't handle those vaccinations so soon after the other.
Also, in the previous note from Papa Bear, we learned that autistic brain changes happen actually during gestation. Science!
So, I am sensitive to every parent's concern. I do think it's a public health issue. I'm sensitive, though, also to the people. It may be for religious reasons or other reasons who have these beliefs, and I wouldn't want to trample on them.
God, God, God.
We have people who have religious beliefs in this country who kill infant male children because they insist on having a man who does not disclose that he has herpes suck the blood out of a wounded penis because they think their great big juvenile delinquent in the sky wants them to.
So whose rights are you trampling on there in that particular instance, Andrea Tarantula? You don't want to trample on the parents' rights? How about the child's? Now, granted, most kids don't like getting shots, but a lot of kids do. They can be appealed to rationally. Now, baby, we're going to get this shot, if they're old enough, of course. So just to be clear, we will, in this country, we will let some religious sects engage in ritual mutilation of a little boy's penis, but Andrea Tantaros and the right-wingers and the birthers and the deathers and the tenthers and the baggers and the booger-eaters and the libertarians and the birchers and, you know, Republicans, they want to make sure they don't trample on the religious rights of parents to see to it that their children have an increased risk of childhood illness, which can be fatal.
I'm sensitive to every parent's concern.
And then, of course, there was Jedediah Bela, who said,
I'm very worried about a government that can start telling you regular citizens that you have to get a flu shot, that you have to do this, or you have to get 35 vaccines before they hit 36 months. That concerns me. And what comes next?
Well, what comes next, Jedediah, is we'll start registering them Democrat and making them vote against Republicans who think that vaccines are a personal issue.
'Cause see, that's the problem with infectious disease. It isn't a personal issue. And herein we sort of expose the stupidity of the whole lone wolf nature of right-wing libertarian ideology. You don't want a vaccination? Lone wolf? Okay.
Ooh.
Don't get one. But the problem is, lone wolf,
ooh,
if you don't get the vaccination, and you get somebody else sick, well, then we may just have to come after you and get Atticus to get the .22 out and shoot you at a distance and take your carcass off to the dump down by the Yules and throw it over there. Lone Wolf. Because, as Dr. John has pointed out so many times, there are no lone wolves. If we do not have community in this country, we ain't got much in the way of a country. If we're all just rugged individualists pulling ourselves up by our own Ayn Rand hand-stitched bootstraps, then the idea of looking for a more perfect union, providing for the general welfare, having a common defense, becomes meaningless. Absolutely, utterly, completely, and totally meaningless.
Well, sorry you'd like for your kids not to get measles, but, you know, their rights not to have measles ends where my nose begins.
Bless you!
Sorry about sneezing all over your kids' noses, but, see, my rights extend past their noses where infectious diseases are...
Bless you!
Sorry. Wow, did I just hose your kids down? Oh, Jesus. Like I said, my rights don't end where their noses do begin. For I am a libertarian. And I don't give a good damn about anybody else but myself. Asshole. That's kind of where we are. And it's more than a little bit frustrating. And beyond frustrating, it has become dangerous. Because, like infectious disease, this right-wing lone wolf bootstraps notion has become something of a vogue in this country.
I don't need no government. Don't want no big government.
And it's a recipe for freaking disaster. And the problem is those disasters don't necessarily have to fold. You know, every disaster is not defined by jets flying into buildings in this country, which is a problem for us. We think that that's what it has to look like. But it doesn't. Sometimes disasters are disasters that are played out in children's bedrooms. They're played out in the bedrooms of parents worried sick. They're played out in cars on the way to hospitals with little children in convulsions.
Yeah, but what about my liberty?
Your liberty.
Sit, Liberty, sit!
With regard to Dr. Wolfson, note coming in from Steve, request permission to kick the shit out of Dr. Wolfson. Well, now that wouldn't be nice, Steve. Because he has to go home and take care of his child because his child is pure. Not like some child that one of us proles would have. Send him off into the public and And, you know, it's their fault, right? That child can't be vaccinated. That child should be living in a bubble. They don't have any bubbles over hospitals where that child has to go for chemotherapy for her leukemia, 3-year-old that she is. This is America. This is America of 2015. This is a 2015 version of America where people treat as serious politicians and pundits who would deliberately put your family at risk in the name of some vacuously defined idiocy that they personally term liberty. Let's see. According to Raw Story, Donald Trump, anti-vaxxer, Smashing Pumpkins frontman Billy Corgan, anti-vaxxer, Chris Christie, anti-vaxxer, Jesus, Bill Maher, anti-vaxxer, Rand Paul, anti-vaxxer, Rob Schneider, anti-vaxxer. Hillary Clinton has even said that she's committed to finding the cause of autism, including possible environmental causes like vaccine, and of course Mussolini. Back when she was a half-term governor, she said, if asked, though, you can let folks know, U is spelled with the letter U, though is spelled T-H-O. I would not propose government mandating anything like shots for our kids. Actress Mayim Bialik of Blossom and Big Bang Theory. She says hers is a non-vaccinating family. Oh, look, John McCain. Golly, Ned. And this is only an hour's worth of morons. In my father's mansion are many morons. Many, many morons. Oof. So, that's hardly even the beginning. And we'll, of course, engage in conversation if you so desire. And it's not all about vaccines and vaccinations by any stretch of the imagination. Oh, hell no. We got oodles. Oodles, I tell you. Of morons. But since he was featured in the opening stanzas of Moran Monday, let us pay another visit to Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist. Who, this past Friday, happened to be, and you never know exactly why, maybe he was looking for things to plagiarize. But Rand Paul happened to run across a piece in the Boston Globe. Subject, the headline, Jeb Bush shaped by troubled Phillips Academy years, possible presidential candidate had tumultuous 4 years at Andover School, which is, of course, in Massachusetts. Jebby graduated from Andover in June of 1971. And this particular article in the Boston Globe by Michael Cranish documents the mean-spirited, nasty, hateful, now entirely predictable behavior patterns of a member of the Bush family, this one Jeb, when attending Phillips Exeter, Exeter Phillips, exit stage left, whatever, in Andover, Massachusetts. Turns out he was a bully. Turns out he liked to beat up on the smaller, weaker students. By God, the apple never falls far from the tree, does it? He had such crummy grades, he was near to being chucked out of the fabulous Phillips Exeter Academy. He explained it away by saying, I drank alcohol and I smoked marijuana when I was at Andover. It was pretty common. But he couldn't remember ever bullying anybody, naturally, and he said he was surprised that anybody would remember him as a bully. But part and parcel of the whole thing is that Jebby is now firmly and decidedly anti-cannabis. And yeah, while Jebby says, I smoked marijuana, that's not what his classmates remember. His classmates remember sort of a more, what could we say here? Sort of a more mean-spirited version of Spicoli from Fast Times at Ridgemont High. One of these,
I'm so wasted!
Yeah, that, only with a kid to punch, more. Slap or torture or give a swirly to, right? Yeah. Peter Tibbetts told the Boston Globe, the first time I really got stoned was in Jeb's room. He had a portable stereo with removable speakers. He put on Steppenwolf for me. Yeah. But along the way, Jebby makes clear that he's not a fan of legalized cannabis. Oh, no, 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 no. Well, I mean, you know, and what's the fun in that? I mean, you want in those formative teenage years, you want the patina, the panache, if you will, the air, the essence of illegality and criminality and outlawism and rolling up a bath towel and sticking it under the door and crap like that. Yeah. Well, Aqua Buddha was not amused. Aqua Buddha is definitely running for president, if you haven't noticed. Aqua Buddha said, you would think he'd have a little more understanding then. I think that's the real hypocrisy, is that people on our side, which include a lot of people who made mistakes growing up, admit their mistakes, but now still want to put people in jail for that. Had he been caught at Andover, he'd never been governor. He'd probably never have had a chance to run for the presidency. And yet, when he himself was confronted with the Aqua Buddha story, Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, just ran the hell away.
Well, I don't have any remember. I don't think I ever did that. What?
Here.
His only response was to say, well, let's just say I wasn't a choir boy when I was in college.
See, this is where Rand Paul is trying to forge that left-right coalition that Ralph Nader was recently talking about. Ralph, you might recall, recently suggested that Rand Paul might be the very guy to be president of the new United States of America. Yes, that Ralph Nader. Ralph wants to have a left-right coalition, and we know that from time to time, progressive people, for some reason or another, the ones who were apparently raised in bell jars or something, look over wistfully, longingly, and lovingly at Rand Paul and that thing on his head and think,
well, I mean, how bad can he be? He wants to smoke dope and he doesn't like drones. I mean, maybe that's the president we need.
Stupid! Robert in Australia with a note. Hey, Bob. This is really the ultimate expression of the me approach to life, isn't it? Talking about the anti-vaxxers. The I'm more important than everybody else in the world way of living. I wonder if they believe they have to obey traffic regulations, you know, to protect the lives of other road users. Precisely. Libertarians, of course, want to drive as fast as they want to drive on the highway and screw everybody else because freedom!
Wolverines!
So it's 6 minutes past the hour, and I want to thank, in addition to Peter, I want to thank Randy for jumping in on Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge. That means between them we have... $80 to go. $80 to go in Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge, which opens the first program of every month. And thank you again to Gary Laborman for this evening's Have a Show on Me, More and Monday. Jim asked a little bit ago, West Virginia requires mandatory vaccines. No? Yes. However, we now have a libertarian-influenced, wild-eyed, teabagger legislature, which I'm sure will get around to dealing with that sooner rather than later, because freedom. And that's freedom, F-R-E-E-D-U-M-M, freedom. You doubt me? Look what they've already done. So here we go. Strap in. The ride could be a little bumpy for us hillbillies. So you know the numbers, right? Yeah. Oh, that's a great idea. Thank you, Michael and Madison. A little long.
This is a long distance dedication for Jeb Bush from all of us at the Horn. Courtesy of Michael and Madison.
Thank you, Michael. This is Conversation Radio. Like I said, you know the numbers, right? 304-574-8178. Or 304-663-4676, 304-663-HORN. Either one gets you through to the program just fine and dandy. Skype to Skype from anywhere in the world, unless it's behind like the Great Firewall of China or something, or Iran. Skype to Skype, the contact is Bob Kincaid, Horn, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D-H-O-R-N, and you are welcome to join in. If you've never sent me a contact request, just do so, and we will be conversating in almost no time flat. Listener-supported conversation radio is what this is. I am Bob Kincaid, and it's More and Monday, and we ain't even started.
I'm a bully, a big badass bully. Do what I say, get thrown the fuck out the way. I'm a big old bully. Bullet, bullet, trying to rule the world. Bullet, 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 wanna steal my girl. punch the fuck in the face. I'm a big old bully. Bullet, bullet, trying to rule the world, bullet. Bullet, bullet, wanna steal my girl, bullet. Bullet, bullet, you could see the world, bullet. You would know that there will always be a bigger bullet. Every time you turn around, else is there to stay you down. Is that a bully? Is that a bully? A bully? Is that a bully? Is that a bully? Is that?
That's a bully!
Boss man tell you what to do.
That's a bully!
Push it, lady, push it. Punch the fuck in the face. I'm a big old bully. Bullet, bullet, trying to rule the world, bullet. Bullet, bullet, wanna steal my girl, bullet. Bullet, 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 you can see the world, bullet. You would know that there will always be a bullet. Bullet, bullet, trying to rule the world, bullet. Bullet, bullet, wanna steal my girl, bullet.
And you know, when it comes right down to it, when you think about it, that doesn't just apply to Jeb Bush. That applies to the anti-vaxxers too, because it's a form of, I guess, what, passive aggressive bullying, or is that just a complete contradiction in terms? This is the Horn, Moran Monday for the second day of February 2015, Groundhog Day. We're celebrating it here by getting snowed on, but not to nearly the degree that those north of us have gotten. Hope you're safe and warm wherever you are, or safe and cool wherever you are. Hi, Australia. By the way, just a little note. Right now, we've got one line full, 304-574-8178. If you want to get into the program, the open line is 304-663-HORN, 304-663-4676. Rousing time being had by all. Well, there, okay. Now we don't have any lines on. Now we don't have any lines on, so both lines are open. Rousing time being had in the chat room. Good evening, Carol Abel. Good evening, Devin. Good evening, Gerald. Good evening, John. Good evening, Kathy. Good evening, Kelly, and Laborman, and Stockton Larry, and Texas D, and Will, all capably moderated by longtime, indefatigable, inveterate, veteran chat room moderators Lottie and Sparky. So, yeah, sorry I didn't get to the phone line quickly enough. Dadgummit, you'll have that, I guess. And a reminder, we have $80 to go in Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge this evening. Thank you very kindly to Shirley, who is there at the beginning of every month. Hi, Cheryl. And thank you to thus far Peter and Randy for responding to it. They doubled their contribution because that's the way the challenge works. If we get the challenge amount, then Shirley fulfills her side of the bargain. Isn't that cool? Yes. And by the way, going forward, I don't know whether our buddy Scott in Sweden has seen the Super Bowl yet, so don't anybody talk about its outcome. Be- because Scott is pretty good at not finding out about things he wants to, that he plans on finding out by watching later. Nobody talk about the Super Bowl. Okay? Okay. What else? Well, I want to follow up on all of this anti-vaxxing baloney by sharing with you from the truly mind-bending pages of the op-ed section of the Washington Post. And you really kind of want to ask the question, hey, who let this tripe through? Oh, no, time out. Let's not keep people waiting. Let's go to the gizmo line. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob. How's it going?
I'm getting along. How about you?
Good. This is Todd down here in South Carolina.
I recognized your voice.
Oh, well, that's nice. I'm not going to keep you long. I'm going to run to the drugstore anyway. But I have a friend, right? And mm-hmm. She has two small kids, and she's an anti-vaxxer. And it kind of scares me. We're tight. We're just platonic friends.
Mm-hmm.
But they came over here a few weeks ago for the weekend. And I'm telling you, I was sick for 3 weeks after that. You know, kids get sick. You know, I don't know if you've ever been around little kids. But
I was one once. And we raised four of them.
Mm. Well, you know, I'm not on the fence, but like I don't do the flu shot, and I understand about the aerosol, the dangerous thing, mercury, and all that. I think that has some merit, but there's certain vaccines that we have to have as a civilized society. I mean, it's like if you don't want to do that, then you can't live here. That's kind of the way I feel about it. Does that make any sense?
Well, yeah, it does. While it would be impossible and impractical to simply exile all the anti-vaxxers to say Liberia, which would be a good place. What we're talking about here is whether or not we can have functioning communities. And what's important to take into account here is that this really is a triumph of right-wingism. Because they despise the idea of government unless the purpose of government is to enrich defense contractors and the military-industrial complex and whoever the corporate welfare queens are that are the flavor of the moment, like, you know, charter schools. They despise the idea, the very essence, the notion of community unless it has a wall and a gate. Gated communities, they're into. Communities where we all work toward our a common positive destiny? No, not so much.
Well, but you see, what you're saying right now is exactly why.
I mean, it's libertarianism writ large.
We're dysfunctionalism. You understand that that's another fracture. This is why maybe at some historians say we're going to fracture into a number of pieces. Like Dr. Bill talked about, you know, they didn't expect this thing to last. So maybe Madison was right. You know, there's a lot of ways to fracture, and that's just another fracture in our concrete that makes America. You know, because there's a lot of people out here that they don't want to do certain things. And like you said, we're supposed to be a community. We're supposed to be working toward one goal. How can you be against fixing highways? You fucking ride in the highway. Everybody rides in the highway.
Sure, but that's true. But the right wing, Todd, are absolutely, utterly, completely, and totally convinced that corporations can build highways better than we the people can. Corporations can build highways, and people can profit from them because profit, you must understand, is their number one priority. Health, safety, happiness, well-being, comfort, education. Bullshit on all of that. Profit, baby. Profit. If it doesn't profit, it doesn't need to happen. If we can't have roads that are built for profit, then we don't need roads.
No. Didn't we already visit that in the Gilded Age? Isn't that
sure we did?
Look why
our passenger rail infrastructure is as broken down and bedraggled as it is. Profit.
Yeah,
it wasn't profitable. Now, once upon a time, passenger rail was profitable, and passenger rail travel in the United States, for those who could afford it, and of course, we're also talking about the Jim Crow era, and remember, Plessy versus Ferguson was a case about a railroad car. For those who could afford it and had the requisite privilege to enjoy it, it was a magnificent experience. Linen tablecloths, nice napkins, silver service, cooking, club cars, cigars, dining, liquor, Cary Grant getting thrown in. Well, you know, but you get the idea. As soon as the highways and the jet age opened up, the railroad company said, fuck this, and we got Amtrak.
Yeah.
And then as soon as we had Amtrak, the Republican Party went hammer and tongs trying to destroy it because it was a government railroad.
I really don't like the fact that you had to bring railroads up because when I was in the city, that was my main transportation, what they call a regional rail, to go downtown, which is like a
sure.
It's not the scale of an Amtrak train, but you know you're on the same track. They share the tracks of Amtrak, but you go under these trellises and under these bridges and whatnot through the industrial sections of Philadelphia. I'm like a history person. I like to look at the time. What do you call that thing where you have the year it was built? It's not a time stamp. I'm thinking too many documents. On the side of a building where they have the year.
Oh, the cornerstone.
The cornerstone. And all these bridges were built during the CPA, 1936, 1932, 1934. And they had these stalactites coming down. You know, you can see the minerals dripping. And it's like, man, this thing's going to fall any second. And a lot of people depend on that. They just wait for, they're going to wait for everybody to die before they do anything like that. People who live in the South or out in the, you know, in the Midwest or out in the middle of nowhere where Clive and Bundy lives, they don't understand a lot of people still depend on rail to get to work. And it's a big deal.
Well, yeah, and you know what? That will be maintained at some modest level of function, and it's important. And you know, intra-city rail, whether it be the Metro mm-hmm. in D.C. or the Subway in New York or the Underground in Boston, what the L in Chicago, what have you, is wonderful. And it'll be maintained because the citizens demand it, and the people who rely on profits will fall off if people can't get to work. But any idea of us going forward with not going to happen. And I want to point out that actually, when you dialed in, I was getting ready to jump into a story, and if you don't mind, I'd just like to share this with you as we talk, Todd, real quick. I got a note from Ron in Raleigh, a little bit about 19 minutes before airtime, and the subject line on Ron's note said, "How do people think like this?" And he said, "I picked up today's paper and read this editorial. I had to scream and run rabbits. The U.S. is done. It cannot be salvaged. It has to be completely rebuilt." And this is from the op-ed pages. It is an opinion piece published in the Washington Post, for sake, by some jackass who has been afforded the title of resident scholar at the American Enterprise Institute, which is just this nasty, nasty cell of libertarian, anarcho-Randian profiteers. The guy's name is Michael Strain. And Jesus, I don't know where he is, but apparently Washington, D.C. I don't want to be anywhere near this guy because he's toxic. Is
he talking about philosophically rebuilt? I know he doesn't mean physically.
Ron and Raleigh said the whole country's going to have to be rebuilt. And Ron means philosophically and physically. Here's the headline, and of course Mr. Strain did not choose it. This was put on there by a copy editor at the Washington Post, but that's all right. Here's the headline. End Obamacare and people could die. That's okay. End Obamacare and people could die. That's okay. We make such trade-offs all the time.
What the?
During the health care debates of 2009, Representative Alan Grayson brought a poster on the House floor, the Republican health care plan, Die Quickly. I'm sure you remember that, as we all do, because it was true. In the summer of 2012, when Obamacare was threatened by a presidential election, writer Jonathan Alter argued that repeal equals death. People will die in the United States if Obamacare is repealed. Columnist Jonathan Chait wrote recently that those who may die are victims of ideology, collateral damage incurred in conservatives' pursuit of a larger goal. If these are the stakes, many liberals argue, then ending Obamacare is immoral. Now, here comes Mr. Strain writing for himself in the American Enterprise Institute, Todd. He says, except it's not. Ending Obamacare in the privileged, probably really, really white world where Michael Strain lives is not immoral. It is not immoral to throw millions of people off of expanded Medicaid. It is not immoral to throw people off of the health care that they have had and back into the tender mercies of a profit-driven system that doesn't want them in the first place. Now, here's where, I can almost feel the steam that's sort of building up inside you, Todd.
You can't. I know you can. It's palpable. It's out in where we're connected.
Here's where Michael Strain begins to explain to us stupid little proles how stupid little prole we are. In a world of scarce resources, a slightly higher mortality rate is an acceptable price to pay for certain goals, including more cash for other programs, such as those that help the poor. Yeah, because Michael Strain's out there trying to figure out how to help the poor every goddamn day. That's why he's a residential scholar at the American Enterprise Institute, because the American Enterprise Institute, well, it just exists to serve the poor, right? Less government coercion and more individual liberty. More health care choices for consumers, allowing them to find plans that better fit their needs. More money for taxpayers to spend themselves and less federal health care spending. This opinion is not immoral. Such choices are inevitable. They are made all the time.
But the thing is, what he misses out on, Todd, is that those choices aren't made all the time by the people who are poor and need health care. They're made by rich sons of bitches like Michael Strain, who don't give a good rat's ass about what happens to the poor or people who don't have the health care.
Oh, dear me, yes, do pass me the organic, cruelty-free, hormone-reduced butter for my... Christ, look, a shrimp fork.
You know something? What you're describing now between the first topic about the anti-vaxxers and what you just quoted and read, all right, this is becoming a cauldron of pathology. Because I've worked like temp jobs in between employment where you work these conventions, like when you go to a banquet or whatnot. And there's a lot of people that they cobble together three jobs, and they can't miss a day of work. You know, they work every day of the week. I've been around, and a lot of them are women, you know, women or men, whatever. But they come to work sick because they have no health care. They can't afford it. And they're coughing on people's salads. And what I've seen it. I've been disgusted. I had to leave. I had to stop doing it because I even served Joe Wilson. Nobody else was serving. You know, remember, I lied. I served him right here, and some bitch spit on his salad. I didn't tell him, you know, because he's a dickhead. I didn't, you know, fuck him. But I was like, oh, I can't do this anymore. So they would rather, and these are the same people who have enough money to go out, and they think, oh, I'm going out and have a nice dinner. You know, I've gone out and had nice dinners, but I always think about all that hands-on food. You got to think about who's making your food. So these folks are just silly. They're silly, and they're depraved, and they're pathological.
Okay, so they're depraved. I agree. You and I might go round and round, Todd, about whether or not they're silly. I think they're mean. They're just plain mean. They're vicious. And they will do. This is not that place. You ought. Oh, come on, Todd.
I can't be just foul and vile all the time because I will get, it just gets me very, very upset. But yeah, you're right. They're all mean. They are. And you know what? And maybe that they're the same people who would be eugenicists from the 20s. They're fascist, eugenicist type crazy people.
And so you know what this overeducated dumbass compares a working mom, a working dad, a working, you know, couple, whatever, working single person, the working poor, or the working anybody for that matter. You know who he compares them having health care to? Speed limits.
What?
By allowing people to drive their cars at speeds at which collisions result in death, our government has decided that the socially optimal number of traffic fatalities is not zero. Some poor souls die. There were more than 30,000 traffic fatalities on America's roads in 2013. If we didn't accept that risk, we'd lower the speed limit to a rate at which accidents simply don't kill, such as 10 miles per hour. Instead, we've raised it periodically over the years, and you can now go as fast as 85 miles per hour on a few highways.
You're doing Bill Buckley. I don't even think he would have said that. I really don't.
Understand, Todd, this is pure 200-proof libertarianism. But the thing is, the speed limits are not the same as people being able to go and have preventive care that will keep them from dying prematurely. It's not the same thing.
Well, no.
Because sometimes, for instance, people... Well, no, that probably plays into his hands. But okay, so car crashes. No. Okay, so next he's going to compare... taking people's health care away from them to homicides and say that the United States has decided that zero homicides aren't worth it and therefore the Second Amendment and Wolverines and all of that. It's nice to see a right-winger finally acknowledge that, in point of fact, we do choose we do choose to sacrifice human beings in the name of a noisy, spoiled plurality's desire to collect guns. By the way, we got a story out there courtesy of Tim from L.A. You're gonna love this, Todd. This is just a beautiful thing. No, it's not beautiful at all. It's brutal and it's horrible and it's heartrending and let me just pull this up real quick.
Does the Washington Post have a paywall?
No, apparently I've got it here. Here we go. Since Michael Strain wants to say that, yeah, we've made a choice in America that, you know, we're going to accept homicides. Dateline today. An American toddler shot his father and his pregnant mother with a single bullet after reaching into her purse for an iPod, but instead pulling out a handgun. Seconds after grabbing the 9mm pistol, the 3-year-old boy unwittingly fired one shot, which hit his father in the buttock, passed out of his hip, and then struck his mother in the shoulder. Both parents will survive. Yeah. The report notes, last month in Missouri, a 5-year-old shot his 9-month-old brother dead after getting daddy's freedom protector. And then the month before that was the incident in Idaho where the woman who was the nuclear scientist, Todd, who was so terrified to go from home to Wally World that she had to have a gun in her special Christmas gun purse that hubby had given her. She went to Wally World and her 2-year-old got into the zippered special Freedom Protecting Second Amendment gun compartment and blew her away dead. So, yeah, I guess Michael Strain of the American Enterprise Institute is correct, Todd. We do decide in America that we're willing to tolerate homicides because it's still a homicide even if a 2-year-old does it, even if a 5-year-old does it, even if a 3-year-old does it. It's still a homicide.
Well, he's not very well developed, is he?
He's about as well developed as any ordinary libertarian. He's got the same amount of morals.
Well, let me ask you a question. First of all, I'm not. It's a shame. I would have been shocked, but I've been here for 5 years now, and I never. I mean, it's hard to get a gun and fill it. I mean, if you're, you know, well, it got a little bit easier, but. What I'm trying to say is that they're so prevalent. I mean, you can go to the same store and get a DVD and a handgun and a Coke, you know, all on the same trip, right in the same place. It's not a big deal. And when I went to get my concealed carry permit, there were mostly white women, a couple white dudes, and a couple of black women. Well, I'd say people who appeared, because I'm this ethnicity thing, I'm not quite sure about, but. All I'm saying is that in the South, from what I've seen, it's these old white women you got to watch out for because they get scared of their shadow and they're ready to shoot somebody. And they all have guns. They all have guns. And they don't want black men to have guns. They don't want you to protect yourself. And they don't really want black women to have guns. Look at Marissa Alexander. Now, she fired a warning shot in Florida where Zimmerman has committed numerous crimes, right? She
right.
fired a warning shot in her garage, in her house.
Doing hard time.
60 years. They finally let her out, and she's on house arrest now. She has to pay for it. See, that's how they, because I'm telling you, the dude pulled me to the side. He said, I don't know if you really want to do this. I'm like, what are you talking about? He's like, well, even if you have a permit, you're a person of color, they're going to, and this is a constable, what they call a constable, which is like the people they send around to serve warrants here. So he's like, well, I don't know if you really want to have that. You know, if you have a gun, they're going to kill you. They're going to shoot you. I was like, but I don't have a permit. He's like, they don't care about that. It's a white, old white dude telling you this. So this is the new lynching. See? But I really didn't want to get into this topic because it's very, but you brought it up, but it's depressing. But the whole thing, you know, this gun thing is crazy. But look, I wanted to ask you a question now about Scott Walker. Now, do you think he's a libertarian? He calls himself a Republican, but do you think he's a libertarian?
If he's got the adoring support of the Koch brothers, he's got to have some serious. Look, you can't get anywhere in the Republican Party now without having libertarian leanings. The libertarian triumph in the Republican Party is how we define the deep, hard, persistent, unending, ain't never going to come back from it, rightward shift of the whole party. You know, the Nelson Rockefeller Democrats, or I'm sorry, Nelson Rockefeller Republicans are gone forever. They're like dinosaurs, okay? Not coming back. A big conservative asteroid hit the Republican Party and killed those dinosaurs off. You can't be presidential timber in the Republican Party and not be just absolutely up to your furry little eyebrows in libertarian politics. So I guess that's the long answer. Yes,
this is why I'm asking you, because is this the same governor that I remember? Maybe my memory's funny sometimes. It seems like a couple of years ago, some people called into his office and they posed as one of the Koch brothers. Was it the same guy? Do you know what I'm talking about? Where he fed into it, right? And he thought he was talking.
Yeah, I do remember that story. Was that Scott Walker?
I believe that was Scott Walker in Wisconsin, because that was when he was started the fight against the labor movement, which is, you know, remember, Wisconsin was the birthplace of the union. So that was a big deal to them. That's like their bailiwick, right? So, yeah, it was, yes. And see, I don't hear anybody in the mainstream news asking any hard questions about that. That's fucking bullshit. He is not, and it looks like he might, because, you know, people are sick of Bush. And they think Scott Walker's all meek and whatnot. No. He's a coke-back piece of shit. We could, you know, and I'm not voting for Hillary. This is the year that I say, fuck it. I will either not vote. And I understand what you said to me a few months ago, but you got that jackass Joe. My God. No wonder you weren't excited to vote. Ugh. But, all right, I digress. But do you understand? Yes. I mean, you can Google it later on if you feel like it, whatever. But I think that was Walker. Yes. You know that prank I'm talking about, right?
Yeah.
See, that's scary. But he's back. He's stamped and approved. They already said, remember, didn't they say last week, 2 weeks ago, they're going to spend, what, $98 billion or some shit like that?
It sounds about right. Yeah.
Well, 98 million. It can't be 98 billion. Wow.
Yeah, well, or 980 million, something like that, maybe. Jenny up in Wisconsin, just confirmed what you were talking about and sent me a link. Did Scott Walker get crank call owned? Yes.
Uh-oh. Red flag.
Yeah.
You're on alert. Now, I want to see some of these.
Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker's office confirms that the recording of a call between the governor and an alt-weekly writer posing as David Koch, one of the billionaire GOP financier brothers, is real, and it is actually Walker on the recording. The governor's office released a statement. Walker spokesman Cullen Werwe said, "The governor takes many calls every day. Throughout this call, the governor maintained his appreciation for and commitment to civil discourse. He continued to say that the budget repair bill is about the budget. The phone call shows that the governor says the same thing in private as he does in public, and the lengths that others will go to disrupt the civil debate Wisconsin is having." Ay, 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 ay. Yeah.
Okay. Well, and listen, anybody who's listening, Bob, everybody, if you're listening, you already know that Mr. Kincaid does an excellent job, and also does Dr. O'Brien. So please nominate these folks on the podcast nominations. I think if you just Google that, it's very simple.
Oh, is that going on again?
And it's February 6th, last day. So people, you need to get on that, because I just think you do a great job. And you and Dr. O'Brien, you guys have to be recognized.
I really appreciate that. It seems like we always find out about these contests 2 days before they end, so.
Well, the sixth, it's not that hard. What you have to do is make sure you have the URL. Most people are computer savvy, I guess. You just right-click or whatever, copy and paste the name. I didn't find out about it until last week. And I forgot to mention it when I called in last week. I forgot to mention it. I got tied up. You know, when I get upset, I get on track.
No, I understand.
But yeah, absolutely. News and politics.
And Dr. Bill enjoyed the heck out of your call, by the way.
I'm glad he did, because I've been around those people. I went to school with those people. And thank God my mother is foo-foo, right? So I kind of knew before college, so, but everybody doesn't know that. It can be very uncomfortable and demeaning, and they're just nasty and evil. There's no need for it. You know, there's just really no need for it. It's unnecessary. But I know somebody else wants to talk to you. Maybe Carol will call in.
I'm happy to report I just saw a note come in from, News Ninja Carol Baker. She is back. Hang on.
Sorry about that. Water went down the wrong way. News Ninja Carol Baker is finally back home in Hooterville, and she's exhausted, but she's tickled to be home, and I look forward to hearing from her soon.
Sounds good. Well, maybe you'll hear from her sister.
Hi, Barbie.
Well, anyway, everybody, remember, all you have to do is Google Podcast Awards. It will come up. The page will look like it'll look like a page like when you're ordering something online, a bunch of little blank slots with different categories. And just read it first before you put it in. But if you're listening, you know, you wouldn't be here if you weren't impressed.
Well, and, thank you, Todd. Thank you very kindly.
Dr. O'Brien, listen, when you see Dr. O'Brien, you know, please just tell him people appreciate what he does.
Oh, well, there was a meeting of the Brain Trust on Saturday, breakfast meeting of the Brain Trust. It was Dr. Bill and Boss Man Wayne and me. And we, in fact, did sit there and talk, and that's where he talked about how much he enjoyed your call and the other calls Thursday evening. And he got so inspired that he submitted an op-ed about that stupid bill.
Wow. Oh, I was highly fucking upset. Listen, I have not stopped thinking about
that. Well, and in fact, he took part of today to discuss the written response that he created. So make sure you get today's podcast.
I'll do that.
And one of these days, if you're free in the afternoon, give him a call. He loves the calls.
I'll do that. And one last thing I'd like to say about Dr. O'Brien is that do you remember when? Well, he's been on this thing about primary sources.
Yes, that's his mission.
Well, it makes me think. Bob, you know, when I was in school, and after a while, when you get up or whatever, you can tell the good professors from the bad professors, and the good ones would always ask you to get, like, 10 bibs, or 10 different sources. And I would always find it interesting because once you're in the book, I mean, when I started college, it was the card catalog, you might get on the internet, you know, it was not like that. But
the Reader's Guide to Periodic Literature.
We had to work for that. I ain't lying. But but my point is that it's funny because when you track down these resources in the bibs, a lot of them, I understand why he's saying this, because a lot of them, they go back to the same source. So it's like a distillation of the same stuff that other people have been saying. Does that make any sense?
It absolutely does, and that's, you know, and that's why he preaches primary sources as opposed to reading everybody agreeing. And he mentioned one today, and I can't remember which exact Federalist paper it was, but he talked about it a couple of weeks ago. The one that's supposed to be the Federalist paper that's supposed to be the basis for the idea of judicial review.
Mm-hmm.
And it was one of those Dr. Bill axe handle moments, and he says, and of course, all the scholars agree that this is the Federalist paper that establishes the principle of judicial review, which, of course, we know because we discussed it a couple of weeks ago, is exactly what it's not about.
I have to go back to that one. Oh, I'm so disgusted with the Supreme Court. They pull shit out of their ass. They don't. The whole thing is supposed to be based on precedent, and they just made new rules. They're fucking ridiculous.
Oh, and it's going to get real interesting real quick this term, because of course, they will decide this term whether or not the federal exchanges can continue to help provide health insurance. And in fact, if everything works out, we'll be broadcasting live from D.C. during the time that those arguments are taking place.
Yeah, I'm not making this about me, but you know, I don't have any health insurance right now, and I went from having excellent insurance to none.
I went through a couple of years of that, and it scared me to death.
Yeah. See, I'm at that age where this is a little, you know, and I'm even it's kind of trepidatious about doing certain things around the house. I'm like, well, fuck, if I fall off this ladder, what's gonna happen? You know?
Right.
These people are insane. I don't get it. Well, I know people want to get in. I really thank you so much for your time and your great job and podcastawards.com, I believe it is.
It's podcastawards.com. Sparky posted it in the chat room just a few minutes ago.
Ah, see, you got good people. You have good people.
Oh, well, what we've got here is that thing that Republicans and libertarians and birchers, et cetera, hate the most. We have community. Inside the chat room, outside the chat room, in the Horn Malloy Skype chat group, we have community.
Well, you know, that's all we can do. And we have to care. If we don't care about each other, these people are just ridiculous. Do you remember when they clapped, that the health care bill was being debated maybe about in between elections, I think, in between presidential elections. And I don't know who was speaking. It was some Republican. And they said, well, we just have to let them die. And everybody clapped.
Yeah, that was during the Republican pageants, and it was Ron Paul asking the question, "What do you want us to do? Just leave them there to die in the halls?" And the teabaggers and the birthers and the deathers and the tenthers and the baggers and the booger eaters and the birchers all just clapped. Yes, they're all because they're Americans and they believe in freedom and Wolverines and liberty, and they just clapped because they want people to die in the halls without medical treatment because they love America.
Well, they love something. I think they love the idea of America, but they don't really love America.
They love themselves. Mostly.
Well, they should sit home and jerk off. How is wrong with you? Well, all right. I don't have high blood pressure, and I don't want to start now.
I recommend against it.
Thanks a lot. I'm going to keep listening and see what's going on.
All right. You take care, Todd. It's awful good to hear from you.
You too, bud.
Bye now.
All right.
Our buddy Todd calling from South Carolina, Stan, proud son of Philly that he is. Thanks for the call, Todd. Both lines are now open, 304-574-8178 or 304, this is the Gizmo line, 304-663-HORN, 304-663-4676. Okay. And Skype to Skype, of course, is Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaidHorn. Yeah. I want to go back because it engendered some responses. I want to go back to the Washington Post op-ed by Michael Strain, defender of liberty. Michael and Madison wrote a few minutes ago, wait. Help the poor? Because you might recall that Michael Strain says that if we could just take health care away from poor people, that poor people could have more programs to help the poor. Help the poor? What the kind of help does this mother think the poor might need more than life-saving health care? What do the poor need help with more than basic health care? An extra helping of deregulation to foster entrepreneurship? A lot of good that'll do them when they're dead. Precisely. I mean, this is... The copy editor over at the Washington Post could just as easily have headlined this, "What Privilege Looks Like." So when we were talking about this earlier, we know that he compares working Americans, the working poor, having health care. He compares it to why we don't have a 10-mile-an-hour speed limit. In other words, people having – this guy is a real jerk. That's an ad hominem attack because I don't think this guy's much of a hominem. I think he's very nearly, I don't know, some sort of silicon-based Star Trek creature. There's the reference. Thank you. He compares, he says that
that working people having health care is the same as having a 10-mile-an-hour speed limit in the country, or that working people and poor people having health care is the same as us saying that we don't want any more little children to be chopped into chutney by people wielding semi-automatic rifles in first-grade classrooms, when, of course, we don't want a 10-mile-an-hour speed limit in America, and we do want more 6-year-olds to be chopped into chutney in first-grade classrooms in America, 'cause freedom! Wolverines! Yes, precisely, Devin, the crystalline entity. We want that. We cherish that. Or at least, well, I don't, you don't, but a whole bunch of America does. You know, if we stopped shooting 6-year-olds in first-grade classrooms, then the government can bring their jackbooted jackboots and put them on our necks and take away our freedom. Got it? So he continues. He says, public policies such as speed limits, gun control measures, and many others usually affect the probability of death rather than resulting in any specific person's death. So economists can estimate the amount of money people are willing to pay to avoid slight increases in the probability of dying, and then use that estimate to calculate the value of a statistical life, a VSL. Okay. Except when you get sick. And see, this merciless ass will never comprehend this, because he doesn't have to work for a living. He has a sinecure at the American Enterprise Institute, where he sits around and thinks big libertarian thoughts all day. So he's never going to face... You want to bet this dumb bastard has health care? You're goddamn right he does! And he's got good American profit-based health care, too. Uh-huh. So... he doesn't understand what it means when a man feels stabbing pains in his chest, but being uninsured tells himself that it's indigestion. He does not understand what it means when a woman in the shower finds the lump in her breast and tells herself, well, it's probably just a cyst, because she doesn't have health care and she doesn't go to the doctor. And then the man with the stabbing chest pains and the woman with the lump wind up going through the miserable process of dying early. Michael Strain neither knows, comprehends, nor cares about them. Because, well, we can't say that them not having health care is why they didn't go to the doctor. I mean, maybe they were too busy working. Maybe they were afraid of doctors. Maybe they preferred alternative medicine. I mean, after all. You get it? And so he goes through a few more paragraphs of electronic vomit, And he says,
repealing Obamacare could, although wouldn't necessarily, result in more people dying, but it clearly would not be immoral.
Clearly? Clearly? It clearly would not be immoral? Clearly? Clearly.
You keep using that word. I don't think it means what you think it means.
Because I don't think that's clear at all, that it's not immoral. What is clear, through his own words, is that Michael Strain, on the pages of the Washington Post, proves unequivocally, and I do know what that word means, that he simply lacks any concern whatsoever for anyone who isn't him or someone he knows personally or has a reason to care about. Black, living in the Mississippi Delta, ain't got no health care? That's a statistic for Michael Strain. Hillbilly, living underneath a mountaintop removal site, breathing polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, tiny microscopic pieces of jagged glass ripping through on a subcellular level inside your lungs, Michael Strain couldn't give a rat's ass. Because those people are not personally enriching Michael Strain. Because Michael Strain's sole goal in life is to be enriched. Because Michael Strain is a libertarian. And he's got his. And F you. It clearly would not be immoral, he says. You see, this proceeds from a mindset that says governments have no business existing in libertarian land. Libertarianism is, when you get right down to it, the world's most hateful, brutal form of anarchism. Now, if you were listening to Dr. Bill last week and the week before, you know he spent considerable time critiquing and discussing a short story by Ursula K. Le Guin called Those Who Walk Away from Amelos. And the story can be understood, among other things, in an anarchist context. Unfortunately, the word anarchism is not properly understood. Most people think hear the word anarchism or anarchist, and they think about, you know, 22-year-olds with mommy and daddy issues and a goddamn black bandana on their face, turning over mailboxes, putting bricks through windows, and setting Volkswagens on fire. That's not anarchism. Anarchism is leaderless self-government. And there is, and as Ursula K. Le Guin shows in that short story, it has a role to play in a national discussion. This is not that. This is the economic equivalent of the 22-year-old kid with mommy and daddy issues putting bricks through windows. Libertarianism. The filth and sputum that flows out of the Competitive Enterprise Institute. It is chaos. But it's chaos that reaches deeply into a personal level. And being a libertarian, this guy doesn't believe that government makes moral decisions. All decisions by government have to be made based upon the notion that government governs best, which governs by letting corporations run amok the most. Can't be regulating them. Remember, Rand Paul said that the Civil Rights Act and the Voting Rights Act were horrible mistakes. Because sooner or later, the free market would have sorted it out, because the free market always gets everything right. Jesus, he's the political equivalent of alfalfa. And you can take your pick, whether I mean the character from our gang, or, you know, the grass that grows. They both have their merits, argumentatively speaking. So, the choice would not be immoral for Michael Strain, because governments don't make moral decisions. God knows there is actually evidence to support that, because had this country had any goddamn morals whatsoever, we wouldn't have done Vietnam. We damn sure wouldn't have done Iraq. We wouldn't still be in Afghanistan. By the way, without giving anything away, I couldn't help noticing that on yesterday's evening's celebration of militarism, the Super Bowl, there was footage of, and it makes me sad to see them, soldiers in Afghanistan who were waving at the camera back home to a country that has less than 1% of its population involved in any way in the military of the United States, and most of whom think that that the definition of patriotism is to put a goddamn Chinese yellow magnet on the back of their cars. It's just sad. So Michael Strain continues, and you know that an argument is going sideways for the author when he starts building straw men. I doubt Obamacare supporters would argue for a society that spends half or two-thirds of its national income on health care in an attempt to ensure that every person with a treatable disease or injury avoids death. Liberals aren't arguing for a paramedic on every street corner and a nurse in every private building. Screw you, Michael. Maybe I am. Liberals and conservatives agree that in a world of finite resources, some people are going to die of potentially treatable illness and injury. The poor so often do. The poor you have always with you. Let's take that paragraph for a minute. The hell's wrong with a country that has a nurse on staff in every office building? Somebody who actually knows for sure how to use the electronic defibrillator. You know, once Dick Cheney's heart started dying and I'm dead again. Did you notice how we all of a sudden started having defibrillators installed in public buildings? Oh, you can't turn around in a building in D.C. without finding one of those, because God knows if Senator Snothead keels over, well, we want to make sure that we can bring his Republican dead ass back to life. But look at that. Consider that for a minute. And the thing is, knowing as I do, and being as close as we all are in this little community, I know what you've already thought. I doubt Obamacare supporters would offer income on health care in an attempt to ensure that every person with a little, little, little. Well, wait a minute. This is a country that spends one-third of its national income on bullets and ships and planes and nuclear weapons and cruise missiles and drones to make other people go die. Oops, you're dead. You ran afoul of the military-industrial complex. We're sorry. But we have to go out and kill some people every now and then, whether they need it or not, just to justify the Pentagon budget. So Michael Strain is again off, you know, he's wandered off into the weeds, when in fact, you know, we are a country that decides to spend a significant amount of our budget on one thing. It just happens to be on killing people instead of keeping them alive. Or, I don't know, educating them. What the hell's wrong with a paramedic on every street corner? Wouldn't that just cut the hell out of response time in the case of car wrecks? What the hell's wrong with a country that tries earnestly to make sure that no one dies of treatable illness? Why can't that be a national ambition, a national goal of a people who claim themselves to be a Christian nation? And by the way, while we're at it, Mr. Strain can shut the fuck up about finite resources. Because Mr. Strain apparently has no problem fracking the out of everybody's drinking water to get more natural gas because profit, because fracking. Now, I'm not particularly aware of Mr. Strain, but I'm guessing that Mr. Strain's never authored any papers suggesting maybe we might want to stop blowing the out of Appalachia and poisoning innocent newborns in the or innocent babies in the womb who are born gasping for their first breath. Haven't found that paper, and while I haven't gone looking for it, I feel pretty confident I could look until hell freezes over and never find it, because treating the finite resource, a finite resource such as coal like that, well, that would violate Mr. Strain's absolute, slavish, orthodox, dogmatic, automatonic dedication to profits. So then he takes up Sarah Palin and the stupid death panels argument. Liberals argued that this discussion was unhelpful. They were right. Devin noting, blow Mr. Strain out the airlock already, please. I'm sorry, Devin. I can't do that. A better decision, a better discussion both then and today, is about appropriate social goals and the resources required to meet them. Among the many needed reforms to our health care system, one should be that we move closer to universal insurance coverage. What? On this point, the president is correct, but what should universal coverage look like? It requires a nuanced answer. No, you cocktail party twit. It requires an easy answer. That word, universal, it means what it says. Everybody gets health insurance. No, we need nuances, Bob. The insurance system should be designed to financially protect people from low-probability events, rather than provide comprehensive coverage for all health events, as Obamacare envisions. Oh, okay, so we're going to insure, we're going to have universal health care that protects people against being overrun by a herd of elephants getting loose in Poughkeepsie at 4:13 p.m. on July the 4th, resulting in somebody getting a black eye. That's a pretty low probability event. But we're not going to provide coverage against myocardial infarction or cancer. Or, I don't know, how about a measles outbreak brought on by a bunch of anti-vaxxers? No, we're not going to cover the 3-year-old leukemia patient who winds up getting measles and has her life threatened. No.
Because that's what Obamacare envisions. People, and here's the libertarianism. People should be free to pay for whatever care they like, but the government should not take money out of their paychecks to subsidize small-scale events that will happen with near certainty, such as my annual sinus infection, or truly elective procedures, Some states choose to cover acupuncture, and most cover chiropractic care under their interpretations of the law. Instead, universal coverage should concern itself with the catastrophic expenses associated with serious medical events that will affect a minority of the population. Only we don't mean minority like he uses minority. No. People who can afford such coverage should be incentivized to purchase it, and those who can't should receive a government subsidy to do so. Oh, a subsidy.
How about we all pay and we all get health care? See, I'm one of those believers in the notion, and I understand the danger of the word, that the simplest solutions are often not only the most elegant ones, but most likely to be the correct ones.
Such a plan as mine would lower premiums and offer more choice than Obamacare. It would require less spending, fewer tax dollars, less coercion.
Coercion!
Poor Devin, out in space, suffering.
Look me, I forgot that OSHA put occupancy sensing safety interlocks on the airlock door. Nanny state!
Yeah. Such a plan would offer lower premiums and offer more choice than Obamacare. Less spending, fewer tax dollars, less coercion, and less regulation. Because,
and see, you can't even write that unless every... It's Darmok and Jalad at Tanagra, you know, Shaka. That's two. Because when you sit down and read this, you have to understand the right-wing libertarian, anarcho-chaotic Ayn Rand metaphor. Coercion? Coercion? Go to law school. They'll teach you in law school when you may mount the defense of coercion. Hint, it has to be right. You don't get to plead coercion until you hear the hammer come back on the gun that's pointing at your head. Then you can say, and that's why I had to rob the liquor store. Having a couple of bucks taken out of your paycheck so that maybe somebody you care about, maybe somebody you don't, but, you know, we're involved in a country here, it's a great big community, and we're trying to build a more perfect union, doesn't die unnecessarily. That ain't coercion. And it is certainly, well, less regulation. Wait a minute. If regulation is the problem, why is it that it is the Social Security is more efficiently administered as a government program than any for-profit retirement plan in the United States? Because it's got some regulation in there, I guarantee you. And then we find out why this thing was written in the first place. And I promise I'm going over to the Skype line in just a second. If you're on hold, please stay that way. Then you got to go all the way through this swamp to find the rodent of unusual size, rodents of unusual size, to find why Michael Strain, resident scholar, big thinker, hand me another peasant on a stick, would you? They're tasty. Why he wrote this idiotic screed in the first place. So we found out less regulation, less coercion. A few conservative plans along. The purpose of this thing is to pitch some right-wing, libertarian, anarcho-Randian stupidity. A few conservative plans along these lines already exist. And they never once even mentions that the Obamacare we have now, for-profit driven as it is, was started out as a Heritage Foundation plan. Man, no honor among thieves.
A few conservative plans along these lines already exist, and not just among economists and think tank scholars. GOP Senators Richard Burr and Orrin Hatch, along with former Senator Tom Coburn, have a well-developed, well-known proposal the thrust of which has growing support among many conservative intellectuals and members of Congress. I'm glad he separated conservative intellectuals and members of Congress. Because, well, I read the line conservative intellectuals the first time through and couldn't stop laughing for a while. The Burr-Coburn-Hodge plan would repeal the Affordable Care Act, including the individual mandate to purchase insurance, and leave the current system of employer-sponsored coverage largely in place. You know, the system of employer-sponsored coverage that allows what? Wait, if you repeal Obamacare and get rid of the mandate, you don't have any health care, okay? You just don't. It doesn't work anymore. But we're going to leave the employer-sponsored health care in place. What about pre-existing conditions? What about coverage for kids on their parents' policies? Because, you know, that's some of them regulations, and obviously Michael Strain doesn't like those. It would cap the tax preference for employer-provided coverage, though only for extremely generous plans, and use the revenue to provide a tax credit for people who don't get their health insurance through their jobs. Oh, goody, a tax credit. Well, I'm going to love a tax credit, because especially people who don't make enough money to freaking itemize and don't have the money on the front end to pay for profit-driven insurance in the first place. That's just great, Michael Strain. Dick. Their plan would provide continuous coverage protection so the people who remain enrolled in insurance can't be financially penalized for getting sick. They're being insurance penalized. New federal funding for high-risk pools. Allow Medicaid participants to receive the tax credits and enroll in individual market plans. Don't you love that word, market? Because this asshat can't bring himself to say profit-driven, Wall Street-driven. No, he can't say that. It's market-driven. And everybody loves the market. You know, there's the fresh broccoli, and there's the organic section, and there's the little baby carrots that I love with the ranch dressing. Markets. See, it's just a market. I mean, like, there's stalls, and you can get your groceries, and there's fruit, and you can go down there, and you can buy a serape or a sombrero. You know, it's just a big open-air market, and over here is insurance. And then he says, a paramount goal of this proposal is to ensure that no one who is or becomes gravely ill goes without adequate medical care. So there we are with another freaking adverb. Adequate medical care. You'll notice he didn't say good medical care. Adequate. And then because Michael Strain, resident scholar that he is, never apparently in his scholarly career learned the meaning of the first law. He never learned the first law of holes. When you're in one, quit digging. And he's already proved himself a merciless asshole further up the article, up the piece. You know, back when he said it's not immoral to just let people die. Repealing Obamacare and replacing it along these lines may result in more people dying or fewer. That's a pretty tough forecast to make. But as with speed limits, gun laws, agency regulations, and many other policies, including Obamacare, the shape of future health care policy will require trade-offs. It is going to be absolutely necessary for poor families in the Mississippi Delta and in Appalachia to quietly go about the business of dying so that I can continue to suck at the think tank tit. If Obamacare perishes, and I hope it does, and frankly I don't give a flying fuck whether anybody else perishes or not as long as it's not me, conservatives should be ready to coalesce around a concrete replacement plan. You know, the concrete that we're going to put the poor's feet in and throw them off the bridge. And the liberals should be, I love it when a right-wing anarcho-capitalist Randian tells me what I'm supposed to think. And liberals should be ready to debate them, knowing all the while that they, too, are advocating policies that will fail to save some of the sick and injured from the fate that ultimately awaits us all. This reminds me of that one scene from the original version of It's a Mad, 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 Mad World.
where Buddy Hackett is speaking to Ethel Merman, and he says, you know, lady, I like everybody. I try to get along. I want everybody to be happy. But not you, lady. I want you to drop dead. Same to you, Michael Strain. Now, we don't know anything about Michael Strain. We don't know if he has children. We don't know if there's anybody on earth that even loves him. But Jesus, you gotta wonder whether he's at least got a mirror in his home. Because how could he ever stand to look in it? Well, because it's profitable for me, Paul. You see, I write this kind of thing, and they smack me on the shoulder, and they say, "Bully old shoe! You certainly stuck it to them now. Now the poor know exactly what we think of them. Won't it be fun when they start dying a little bit more than they already are? I mean, after all, they don't have their Medicaid in Mississippi now, do they?" Jesus. There you are. Republicanism, Bircherism, Deatherism, Tentherism, Booger-Eaterism, and most of all, oh yes, Lord, yes, Libertarianism. Courtesy of the American Enterprise Institute. I wonder if they've got an icon of Ayn Rand's little hairy naked toe that people can lick or suck or whatever on their way into work in the morning in the lobby of the American Enterprise Institute. Wouldn't shock me if they did. Hey, welcome to the program.
You are making me rather happy.
Hi, John.
Sucking toes. I thought this was that Rule 34 already diving into it. Yeah. But I just thought I'd do a quick one here. You know, you ring so many bells when it comes to that. I mean, it's like me doing the truck driving thing. I mean, on one hand, they sit there and they're screaming and hollering and, oh, you're too fat, you're next too wide, you snore, you're going to kill a busload of nuns, you have to learn to eat healthy. Okay, well, then you go to the truck stops and stuff, and what do they have for sale? Pizza, 2 slices for $5.
Cheeseburgers with extra, cheeseburger. Can I have that with extra grease, please? Yeah, sure, honey, absolutely.
Yeah, I'd like to have a veggie cup. Oh, we stopped selling them, and I'm kidding you not. I'm actually
don't
exactly
doubt
what
it in the least.
We stopped selling them because the two men were going bad. Tough.
You can remedy that, because how many times do you reckon the memo came down from corporate? Listen, when the truck drivers walk up, say, "Hey, can I interest you in a veggie cup? They're really yummy." Does that happen?
Yeah.
No, that doesn't happen.
No. It's the cheeseburgers and the pizza. And don't get me wrong. I mean, if a guy wants to eat a slice of pizza,
But you walk up and you, what's the special? Today's special is deep fried grease. Oh, mm-hmm. I'll take it.
Sure. And what choice do you have? And then, but see, part of what my anger comes into is that's what's available. And then on the other hand, you have the government organization saying, for safety reasons, we have to, you snore and you don't get the right kind of sleep. And therefore, you might not be able to drive and have a job anymore. And oh, by the way, employment health care. And, well, costs and money.
Freedom.
And so, there are days, and when this particular conversation of yours kind of struck a little bit of a nerve there, because, these people, they love their profit. That's their, as you said, the little god, the little green god that they sit on the mantelpiece, and they burn incense, and they worship, and they love it, and they squeeze it, and they hug it, and they call it George, and keep wanting it to rain gold.
Well played, John. Well played. I will love it, and I will squeeze it, and I will hug it, and I will name it George.
Yep.
And I will.
But here's the thing: if they understand anything about economics, the profit is money they're taking from somebody else for value that they did not receive.
Absolutely.
And what, you know, what are the profits of the people who employ these people who get sick and die, and then the employer has to go to the trouble of rehiring and retraining somebody? I mean, isn't there some bean counting?
The times, Bob.
Oh, am
you're
I?
Behind the times.
Sorry.
Oh no. I think you may have even mentioned it, so I might just be reminding you. Remember, Walmart issued out and took out policies on their workers.
Oh, I remember that.
When they died, they cashed in the life insurance policy as being the beneficiary. So these little guys, they figure they've got it covered all over the place. They'll work you for crap wages, for next to no health care, and then when you keel over dead, they'll cash the check, and that'll pay for training the next monkey.
God, I love capitalism.
Regulation, you got to have it, because it's the only way to keep these poofling and howler monkeys from just walking off with the whole house.
Oh, well, or setting it on fire, because remember, conservatives, and especially libertarians, would glad if somebody tells them there's a dollar in burning the whole country to the ground, they'll yell freedom and individual liberty and light the match. That's one of the problems here, John. They are not very smart. That's why I spent 5 minutes laughing at the phrase conservative intellectuals.
I was remarked. I listened to a good chunk of your show. What was it, Thursday, that you had Dr. Bill on talking about that bill?
Yeah, that was Thursday.
My brain cells have time on the top. And I don't know if you remember this or not. And it's somewhat famous in the governing circles that back in the old days when I used to have a life and skinny body and people liked me. It was a pretty famous thing that Henry Kissinger, his doctoral dissertation that he did was on a concept called the I'm cutting and pasting here, so you have to forgive me a little bit. But the thrust of his doctoral dissertation was the concept of illegitimate power. The idea was that a revolutionary power will not recognize the legitimacy of that power which exists if it's in opposition to it, and will go to any lengths to coerce education, the educational system, the economic system, the mass communications, universities, everything, in order to... They're fighting a war. They're fighting a freaking war. It just happens not to have guns and bombs. It's fighting over ideas. It's fighting over money. It's all tools and weapons. When your guy, this guy Strantz, or whatever the hell his name is,
Strain,
when he makes the comment about acceptable and reasonable, those are dog and pony show words for, you know, we want you to ensure those things which are like catastrophic, and I'm going to kind of borrow your little terminology a little bit there in your voice. And, you know, the catastrophic and the unlikely events. Because that's exactly what a freaking insurance company does. You take that fine print in the bottom of the freaking policy, and what are you looking at? You're looking at all the little clauses and the exemptions and the, this is not going to go into effect for 3 years. This portion won't go, if it's natural, if it's a windblown, or it's or whatever. There's always something in there to twist it around, to make it, to figure a way not to pay what you owe. And that's the way he's talking. He's talking like an insurance adjuster. Well, did you die on the first or did you die on the second? Because remember, there's a clause here that says if you die on an even numbered day, on the fourth month of the third week, and the cat's got to be yellow too.
Exactly.
Oh, we don't have to pay now. We don't have to pay. And that's how these people think. You know, the curse is on the lawyers, as it were. I sometimes grump about these, you know, these overfed intellectuals like this guy. You know, he was educated. I can almost guarantee you that unless he came from wealth and family himself, then he picked up a scholarship. Well, guarantee you now he talks about the scholarships like they're dogs. He's just like that damn congressman, what is his name, Paul Ryan. Got his entire youth bailed out because of survivor benefits for Social Security. But now that SOB runs around screaming about, oh my God, you know, we got to do something. We got to rework Social Security because it's going broke. I've said this before. You cannot go broke in something that you can make unlimited amounts of. If you can sit down at a freaking computer, tap a few keys, and fill an account with as many zeros as you freaking need, there is no going broke. But if you don't control who puts that keys in, that's what they're fussing about. They want to have the control. They want to be the ones with their fingers on the freaking keys saying who gets the money. And if you're some little black lady living in Mississippi, or you're some poor white, excuse the term, cracker living in Alabama, and you don't have value to their system,
you don't exist.
Why should you be paid?
Right. It's not why should you be paid. It's the simple fact that you don't exist. In libertarian right. land, John, if you cannot contribute to the material well-being of libertarians, you don't exist.
Exactly.
Now, to be fair, and some of them exist on the fringes of society. If you're a libertarian, your pot dealer exists. Okay, because even though he or she is poor, she is contributing to the material well-being of your existence, being as you are a libertarian, the definition of which is a Republican who wants to smoke dope.
Yeah, smoke dope and get laid.
That's it. If you are a prostitute, you exist in libertarian land. Because you can be paid money to make the libertarian happy.
Right.
But exactly. A Department of Health and Human Resources that oversees Medicaid payments, screw that. DHHR that makes sure in conjunction with the Department of Agriculture that children have enough to eat at night, which they don't, by the way. Screw that, too. It does not materially contribute to the well-being of a damn libertarian.
It basically boils down to one thing. As that poor guy said on the podcast, humanitarianism is, and you said it yourself, he says there's not enough resources. Well, the fact is, there's more than enough resources. The only problem is, in their minds, that in order, but because they operate off a zero-sum game, they assume that if more resources go to the poor, that means the rich get less resources, i.e. me.
Right, the thing that just blows my mind, John, is that these theories have been discredited time after time after time after time. The rich have never gotten richer than they got, you know, under Bill Clinton. The rich continued to get fabulously rich under FDR, top rate, under the top rate in the Kennedy administration, under the top rate in the LBJ administration. I mean, LBJ even gave him a bloodthirsty, unnecessary war that made him even richer. And every time we cut taxes like the Republicans and libertarians want, John, we wind up breaking it for everybody.
Yes. We are living right now. If we were to, for the moment of being kind and nice and generous, and let's pat this dog on the head and say, Ronald Reagan, you were such a wonderful man, and you knew well, blessed be you. As much money as them rich fuckers are making right now, it should be raining money
on the
poor.
Yeah, blessed be the Reagan in his comings and goings. May he cleanse the world.
No.
Exactly. I mean, as much money as they're making right now, as the bonuses they're paying out, and the stock market blowing through 17,000 plus, blah, 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 it should be raining money. But it's not. Because we kind of touched on this back at some point in time. Because
there's bubble gum in the short part of the, in the narrow part of the funnel.
Well, there's bubble gumming it. You've got a banking system that's creating money and buying up assets from these people so that they, quote unquote, can loan more money out. Because our entire economy is driven by debt. You want to buy something? We got a great credit card for you. Got a 3.5% initial rate. Great. Wow, I can buy that new computer. 6 months later, you get the rate adjustment notice where you're now up to 12.6, and that's if you got good credit. And it's, you know, the thing works great, and we lived for a long time, as corrupt as it was, because the working people still were making at least a living. But it's reached that point where, you know, right to work state, right to starve. You need to make money? No. You're going to go to work. You lost your $25 an hour job. Now you're a greeter at Walmart going, welcome to Walmart.
And see, that's where one of the challenges comes in a place like West Virginia. Because your first impulse is to look at these, whoever they were that went and elected this Republican majority, and to look at all the people who stayed home and say, okay, geniuses, look what's about to happen to you. All you non-union construction workers, you're about to start making $15 an hour, baby, not 40. And to look at them and say, now don't you feel real smart because you went and you voted to save the little fetuses. Well, your ass is going to starve. Don't you feel brilliant?
Yep.
You bunch of dummies.
Oh, yeah.
You morons. You jackanapes. You fools. You addle-pated... But you can't do that. We have to figure out a way to look at them and say, okay, so this wasn't such a good idea after all, but it doesn't have to be forever. Shall we correct the problem?
They're not going to correct the problem. I see this every day when I travel these roads. They'll even admit. They will sit their teeth in their mouth and bare face hanging out. They'll admit that guy they just voted into office is not doing them a whole lot of good. But you yourself touch on it every freaking Wednesday. If you can convince these people that, and what's a polite way to say it, that you will be good with the Lord or be good with the Spirit or it's the right thing to do, they'll eat that poop sandwich that they just got handed.
You know
they'll
what? And you know what?
So much they love it.
I think they will, but doesn't that mean that the key then becomes the pulpit? Because all these preachers preaching about the evil Democrats and us liberal fetus eaters, aren't they dependent upon congregations that can drop dollar bills into plates passing by them on Sundays? Are they not? I mean, is this not a true market dynamic? And so
not the same way.
But if Cletus P. Butternut can't put that 10 in the plate on Sunday because he's had his wages cut by 2/3 because of the politics that the preacher advocated, isn't the preacher ultimately going to feel it? And maybe that jerk's politics will change a little bit, or is he so far down the rabbit hole that he's just waiting to have his pie in the sky?
I helped, again, doing the gopher work and all that stuff we talked about a long time ago. I had a hand in a paper that was written back in the mid-80s called Religious Demographery. And the thing about religion is that the more educated, the higher the income of the individual and family, then the more percentage-wise, demographically and percentage-wise, the fewer of them go to church. And the ones that do go to church more as a social issue than they, as a social condition rather than a quote-unquote religious. And they're not, and even more, and most importantly, they're much more, choosy and a lot more critical of the way that the pastors operate. But the lower down in the income and education scales that you deal with, they don't make as much money per guy, but the poor people, they come in much larger numbers. And you can make up a lot of that downgrade. You are correct, you know, in the numbers. But you can absorb a lot of losses if you've just got if the pews are just full. And let's face it, if you are a person who's down and out, your life sucks, you lost your job, things are tough, those churches and those charity programs and those food banks and those, you know, those outreach programs and stuff, they are a powerful draw. And they get the numbers. Because a lot of these churches, and I imagine you know a great deal about this, a lot of these churches, they don't necessarily live off the donation plate, they live off the grants that they get from wealthier people. Oh, we're going to do a food drive. We're going to do a food outreach. And I actually, like I said, back in the days when I was on the streets, I actually participated in this. They would charge back to their grant. They would say, oh, we fed 200 people. Well, I was the guy standing at the door with a little clicker going one head, two head, three head, four head. And they were charging. Now, this guy, the actual line, now, granted, I'm clicking one at a time each time the guy came through. But it was, you know, these were the same guys coming through three and four times. But they were being counted individually, and a little woven plastic bowl of beans that you can go buy at, like, say, Walmart for on sale prices, and that's assuming you're going to the store and buying it and not getting it from the USDA commodity runs. They were billing back on their grants at $2.50 a bowl for free labor, tax-exempt status on their real estate, and nominal energy fees, and they were billing back $2.50 a piece. They didn't need the donation plate. These people are cashing in on the programs. And that's how that stuff works. And you get a bunch of poor, angry, upset people, all you got to do is fill the pews up. Somebody will write that check. So, sorry for my little momentary...
Well, no. I don't disagree. I mean, the more people you got in the pews, the more statistical likelihood that, somebody's going to fry the chicken for the preacher.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And, you know, the level of corruption that I saw during the time when I was, like, on my really down-and-out times just shocked me. Very short. I'll do this quickie and then I'll let you go. There was a young man that worked at the bookkeeping in the office of this place. And they, shall we say, he was like a favored of the ministry. He got special privileges and all this stuff, but he had to toe a very tight line with the way he lived his life. Now, as an example, as a side example, when I first got in there, well, I had lost my job, I lost all the stuff, and so I said, well, my job, I'm in the shelter now, I need to go get a job. So I go out, first day, I go out and I find a job. A local bar said, hey, you're all right, I don't need much, can you pull beer? You serve beer. Yeah, cool. All right, we'll hire you on a couple, 3 days a week, and then and we'll get you on the full time here fairly soon because we got some people going to be leaving. Cool. So I go back, and I'm all happy and excited. Damn, I'm going to get a job and get back on my feet, and everything's going to be good. And was told by the pastor that I had a choice. I could take the job, but then I have to leave there and be back on the streets. Or I could refuse the job, and he'd let me stay there. So that set the stage for the conversation that we had, because the guy who was doing the bookkeeping, he got in the same position. He got offered a really nice job. But the ministry stepped in and said, oh, no, that's immoral. You're going to get a job working in a strip club as a bouncer? Oh, no, that's against our morals. So he decided he was going to take the job and leave. So he kind of lost some of his loyalty. So he pulled me in the office one day after church services, and he showed me the printout where I was talking about the $250 for a bowl. I had done the count for that night. I counted, officially, using the clicker, I counted 127 people. They said they fed 375. So you sit there, yeah. Just and it's just the thievery and your guy with this article. They see people as resources, as numbers that can be exploited. For a libertarian, you can have a check. You can have this benefit. But I got to have my cut out of it. As long as he gets his cut, he'll let you have it. But he'll let you have what he thinks you deserve. And libertarians are nasty because they really, truly have, for people who believe in the individual and everything, these people are very class conscious. They like libertarianism, but they want to live with other libertarians. They all want to be, you know, it's all good, you know, we're the best special people, we are the enlightened ones. Those proles out there on the other side of that gated wall there, they're the reason why things don't work right.
Right.
Because
they're not aggressive enough. Yeah, but
there
are lies involved with that, John, that just piss me off. And one of them is that there's something special about the naked, ruthless, remorseless acquisition of money. It takes a hell of a lot more talent to carve a sculpture out of stone or compose a song or write a book. But for some reason or another, these libertarians and these igamfoos think that, to go back to your church reference, this is a carryover from the nasty old history of Calvinism that infects this country. We think either overtly or covertly, we think either consciously or that material wealth is an indication of God's favor in your life. Don Blankenship would not be rich if God did not love Don Blankenship. And that creates the problem. I mean, frankly, I've said it before. Donald Trump, any CEO, I'd say 99% of CEOs, could not survive the life of the working poor.
Oh no, not even close. Our society it values things in such strangeness. You go out and dig a ditch, 8 feet long, 2 feet wide. You move 500, 800 pounds of caliche dirt, which I've done, and get paid $5 an hour to do it. But some guy sits behind a desk with a little machine and a computer and goes click, 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 click.
Click, click, click. Hell, a CEO doesn't even do that. CEOs are hothouse flowers for the most part.
Yeah.
They're considered the lilies. They neither tarry nor do they sow, to get all biblical again.
Oh yeah, they do it. It's the way it works. Is they're paid for who they are, not what they are.
Right.
It's
JP got, you know, JP got rocks and gee, I love money.
Yeah. You know, I read a paper years and years ago that, you know, these CEOs, they make what they make because they all sit on boards that approve salaries.
Yeah, it's a club. They all sit on each other's boards and they all back scratch and log roll and make sure that they're all making good money.
Yeah, they'll make the grand money, and you know, the, it's a sad thing when you sit back and think about it for a minute. You know, this short-term memory desire for making money, they'll run their own companies into the ground if they can figure a way to short sell the stock. They'll burn, you know, it's the, you know, and this is kind of a little exoteric there, but like what you deal with the mountaintop removal. If, using Freedom Industries as an example, or Alpha Natural Resources as an example, if they actually had to pay up front the externalities of what they cause, then the mathematics would be different and they wouldn't do it. They would look at the numbers and say, fast poisons and poisoning people and lung cancers and stuff. Maybe we should just think about just gently drilling a hole in the side of the mountain and extract it the old-fashioned way. Oh, no, that's too expensive, because they are shielded from those externalities by the way our system is set up. And until that changes, you guys like this article guy here, that he's not counting. Libertarians do not count the long-term things. If you have an entire population that's sick and dying, I don't care how good your insurance is, your insurance industries are going to go bankrupt. If you have an entire population that has stillborn babies and are all walking around with diseases, this measles thing is a slap in the face of America, because 15, 20 years ago, this thing was all but eliminated. And now it's back, and you've got the guy writing an article laughing at the United States, saying, ha ha, you guys sat there and pointed fingers at us, and look at yourselves now. But anywho, I did my little venting for the night, and appreciate you and your friends and all that.
Well,
and
thank you, John. We always have a good conversation, and I appreciate it.
Yeah, no trouble at all. Bye-bye.
All right, have a good evening. Bye now. Because it's time to get out of here. And I especially want to go ahead and add in thanks. You know, tonight was the first program of February. That meant Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge was on the table. And Peter and Gordon and Sal and Randy all responded. That means we only have $65 to go to complete Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge. And I certainly hope that happens in fairly short order, because I hate missing out on these challenges. Thanks, everybody. Thanks for your kind attention. Thank you for the finite time of your precious lives that you spend in joining in this conversation. It is affirming. I hope it's affirming in both directions. And thank you for your kind support that keeps this program on the air. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky and Texas Betsy, moderators in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan and Carol Baker. Welcome home, Carol Baker. I imagine you're a bit busy unpacking and probably not listening right now, but welcome home just the same. I imagine you've never been so happy to see that Welcome to Hooterville sign. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thank you to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And ACHEACT, ACHEACT.org. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.